Making loads of money. That's what motivates many tax professionals to start their own tax firm. But Omar Aswat, this episode's guest, had different motivations, centered around having more freedom. Get an insight into Omar's thinking, the pros of running his own tax firm, challenges he's faced, and the support he provides, all in this episode. You're listening to episode 92 of the Tax Professionals Podcast, the podcast to help tax professionals to progress, develop, and improve their careers.
Welcome to the Tax Professionals Podcast, the podcast dedicated to helping you improve your tax career. Here's your host, Jack Bonehill.
Hi everyone, and welcome to this episode. I'm sure there's many of you that have thought about going solo, starting your own firm, and taking your career in that direction. I've seriously considered it a few times, and when I've thought about it, a key attraction for me at least is the possibility of earning significantly higher. Crude, I know, but I'm not the only person that's looked at my charge-out rate, compared it to my salary, and felt like the balance is a bit off. There's much more to it than all that, though, and there are many pros to being employed versus having your own business, and equally, there are cons. Omar, this episode's guest, started Aswat Tax in 2020 and has built up the business to a respectable size in that time, but his main motivation hasn't been financial, it's been to do with freedom, and Omar explains exactly what he means by this in the episode. You'll also get to hear about Omar's journey from being employed to starting his own business, the main challenge Omar has faced, the pros to Omar having his own business for him, how he's developed his advisory skills, the type of support that Omar provides to clients, the first big project that Omar won, and a discussion around spotting opportunities to help clients and for you to win work. Rough timings for each section of this episode are in the details section within the episode within your podcast player of choice, or you can head on over to thetaxprofessionalspodcast.com/TTPP92, and the rough timings are in there also. On the topic of providing tax advice, it's a key skill for any tax advisor to be able to provide high quality tax advice, the type of advice that clients are happy to pay for and that helps them as much as possible. And doing the CTA qualification definitely helps with learning how to do this. You'll be decent after doing the CTA, but you'll likely be excellent. And that makes sense because qualifications can only do so much. After all, you are assessed in an exam sitting. However, the better you are at providing advice, the more likely you are to get repeat business from clients, the more likely you are to get referrals, and the easier you'll make your manager's life when it comes to reviewing your work. The list goes on, including you becoming a more valuable staff member. And this is where the Tax Advice Masterclass comes in. It's been designed by me to teach you how to provide the best tax advice possible. You can get full details by heading on over to thetaxprofessionalspodcast.com/masterclasses. The next Tax Advice Masterclass is in February 2024, that's February of this year. And feel free to message me with any questions that you have, and it would be great to see you or some people from your firm or team on the masterclass. Without further ado, let's get to the episode. If you don't mind then, Omar, can you just start off by telling us a little bit about you and your tax career?
Thanks, Jack, for having me on your podcast to begin with. I know we've been arranging for a while, and just we've had some back and forths in terms of arranging time, and I've cancelled once or twice. So apologies for that. And I really appreciate you having me on your podcast, which is something that I've listened to a few of the episodes as well. So very insightful, and I think quite encouraging as well for some of your podcasts there around the CTA exams, which I've heard as well. And many students have mentioned to me previously that they've benefited from your podcast as well. So I appreciate you having me on to begin with. In terms of my background, I started out as an accountant, a trainee accountant in practice, went out on a few audits to begin with, and quickly realized that it's not for me. So it's a tax professionals podcast. I think I've got the green light to say that, and other listeners probably agreeing with me. I'm not sure if that's the case, but yeah, I quickly realized the audit's not for me. I think a couple of reasons. One, I found it a bit on the repetitive side, and then the flip side would be why I preferred tax was the changing nature of legislation, the way tax directly impacts each and every individual, literally each and every individual. So I went out on a few audits, accountant in practice, and then quickly decided that it's not for me. So started to study for my tax exams whilst working in the tax department of certain smaller private practices, where I started to gain experience. And then most recently, before I set up on my own, I was at Markel Tax, and I was on the helplines, the tax helplines. Did a bit of consultancy, but primarily on the tax helplines, which, to be honest, I think that sort of that experience gained me the most exposure to the different taxes. So how you have income tax, capital gains tax, inheritance tax, stamp duty, land tax, trust taxation, estates, the rest of it. And that experience at that firm in terms of the helpline is literally, the phone rings and you have no idea what the caller is going to ask about. So you don't have, okay, sometimes there may be a little note saying capital gains tax or PPR or something like that. But generally speaking, you pick the phone up and you literally on the spot. So that role allowed me to gain massive exposure to tax. And in terms of looking at legislation, manuals, picking up books from the shelf and literally searching for your answer, I think that literally opened my eyes in terms of how wide tax is, and also allowed me to gain a really good amount of exposure. And then from there, I set up on my own in August 2021. And yeah, so we've been running for about just over two years. And in terms of what we offer as a firm, we offer tax advisory services to individuals, business owners, entrepreneurs. I think we work quite closely with accountancy firm owners as well, legal law firms, chartered financial planners, and the rest of it. And in terms of the offering, we wide range of services, inheritance, tax planning, looking at family investment companies, trusts, international owners, we're looking at share schemes, R&D, capital allowances, group restructurings, property taxation, and then VAT, we do look after VAT in-house, but that one of my colleagues deals with VAT. In terms of, yeah, so a broad range of offerings in terms of what we offer. And yeah, I started off on my own and I've built a small team now. So yeah.
Oh, that's good. How many of you have you got on your team then? Some of them employed?
Yeah, so there's four on the team, including myself. And then as in there's five, one admin assistant, and then four of us as actually providing the tax advice and dealing with clients.
Yeah, well, that's good then, because for 2 years to go from like just you to five people, one of which is not taxed, but that's still pretty good going, isn't it, really? I mean, did you think you would go that well when you started it? I mean, what did you have in as like your expectation?
To be honest, when I set up on my own, if I'm being honest, the one of the key reasons for me was if I get by on a monthly basis, then I'm happy, I'm content. As in, my aim was not like to start growing massively or make loads and loads of money and stuff like that. It was more just about allowing me to be a bit more free in terms of time. So that was my plan when I set up. In terms of the growth, I think the five members of staff has just been in the last 6 months, to be honest, 6 to 9 months. Yeah, as in the growth has been in the last 6 to 9 months. So to be honest, I did start off very slowly. As I say, I didn't have much expectation, which allowed me to not feel demotivated, for example. I think sometimes when people have too much high expectation, then and it doesn't go your way, then naturally, I'm just talking from in life generally, then obviously you'll start to feel demotivated. So I didn't give myself high expectations. I said, look, as long as I get by and slowly but surely, I think longevity is a lot more important than massive growth, and then you can't keep up with things. So I've always seen that I've always taken things from that mindset. And my plan is, broadly speaking, my plan is looking at the long term. So I'm not here to just make a quick buck, as they say, and then just run away. So I'm here for the long term, and yeah, as in I can't complain about the growth.
In terms of the freedom side of things, then, because that sounds like it's a big thing for you, is having more freedom. Obviously now you've got like the growth and you've got more staff, etc. Has it panned out in reality, the freedom, or have you kind of lost a bit now? You've got like people to be responsible for, in effect.
Yeah, so that's a great question in the sense that I'm pretty sure a lot of the listeners probably thinking the same. I think when I say freedom, as in, I mean probably from two angles. One is that, so I'm not sure if it's wise to say this on the podcast, but I'm just going to say it. But as an employee, I don't think I was always the best employee. So in terms of, as in not generally in my tax jobs, but even previously. So in freedom for me is more around I manage my own time. So yeah, in terms of I've got a team now to look after and there's more work that needs to be looked after. Yes, in terms of obviously your attention has to be given there. But still, the bottom line is I still have full control over my time, if that makes sense.
Yeah, so if you don't want to do something, you don't have to, or you can do it late at night or early in the morning. You don't got to be stuck between 9 and 5, for example, that type of thing.
Exactly. So there's been periods during these 2 years whereby, honestly speaking, it's been completely dry, meaning I'm sending out proposals and nothing has been accepted. So 6 weeks, I remember there were 6 weeks late last year, which was just completely dry. So, and then on the flip side, there's times where there's a lot of work coming in. And then that's where I have the flexibility in terms of I can tell the client from the start that, look, if you give us 2 months for this work, when usually I would say 1 month, but because I know about the workflow and I know how well to manage it, I can double the time that we give ourselves, for example. And as you say, the 9 to 5 thing. So yeah, sometimes, to be honest, I do end up working late, very late. I work on Sundays. And I'm not ashamed of it because I can happily turn around and say I work on Sundays and someone may turn around and start laughing at me. But for me, it's, yes, I'm working on Sunday, but that's because Wednesday, Thursday, I was on holiday, for example. I went to the seaside or whatever it is. So, but yeah, I think, but the bottom line is, I think COVID helped in the sense that, a bit off topic, but I think COVID helped in the sense of remote working. So all my employees are remote. We do meet up occasionally, but the remote working allows us to have Zoom meetings and the rest of it. And for me, it's more around as long as the work gets done. So time is not really, because for example, look, I might be able to complete a task in 2 hours, and even it takes someone else 4 hours. Now that doesn't matter because on another task, it might take that person 2 hours and me 4 hours, but the bottom line is we're getting the job done. So whether it takes me longer or obviously the aim is to get things done and keep things moving. But yeah, I think that, I guess that's another angle in terms of the flexibility.
Yeah. Yeah. I do like your point actually about like almost promising clients time scales, because I've had it in my work where someone's promised the work within 2 weeks. I'm like, have you seen what I've got on my plate? That's just not realistic. But when someone promises a short deadline, it's very hard to extend it. Whereas I like to take the approach that you do, to be fair. Obviously, I don't have as much flexibility as you because I work within a team, within a wider firm. But before I promise a date, I always look at the work that the team's got and be like, is it realistic that it's going to be within 2 weeks? Or is it more realistic that it's going to be within a month or 2 months, whatever it is? And it does make you feel kind of energized in a way to be able to just not have someone else have control over your time. Do you know what I mean? Like clients pressuring you to do something really quick and stuff. And it sounds like you've meant the way you've set up, I suppose, is that that's never the case, unless obviously you wanted it to be.
Exactly. So obviously, like, I have to be realistic as well. So sometimes a client may have a pressing case. So then I have to keep that in mind as well. Keeping the client happy obviously comes first. So then that means that I have to take the hit and I have to work extra hours or I have to work late nights or whatever. But it's just about having that balance. And the bottom line is it comes back to me again in terms of what is that balance. But yeah, I think it's very important. I think it's always better to, something that I learned quite early on, I think it's important. It's important to know that we'll always be making mistakes and we should learn from them. And I think the other point in relation to timescales would be that it's always better to, it's better to under-promise and over-deliver rather than over-promise and under-deliver. So that's something I actually learned in my early days.
Yeah, no, I fully agree with that. I fully agree with it. Although you've got to be careful, because if you give someone a ridiculously long deadline, then they're just going to look at you as if you're an idiot. So you've always got to be reasonable about it, haven't you, at the same time, but I fully agree.
Exactly.
Yep. So obviously you mentioned that you've had some long periods where you haven't had work and stuff. So I'm sure that's a challenge, but have you had any other things and how have you dealt with them? Because obviously it's all on you, isn't it? Any challenge you've got, I'm sure you've got some form of support network that you can fall on and stuff, but ultimately you're the one that needs to solve the problems, right? And the challenges. So what kind of challenges have you had then? What are some of the big ones?
Broadly speaking, as in one I would say is in terms of when we're looking at, again, managing work, I think that'll always be a challenge. So I don't think anyone can turn around and say they've got everything under control always. So even till today, a challenge would be that you have to manage work and manage client expectations well. In terms of how I go about doing that, I think that more depends on what exactly is going on at the time. But I would say, yeah, that's definitely a challenge. And I think, I'm not sure if others would agree with me, but I believe that even someone that's been in tax for 25 years, for example, so way longer than me, they'll probably still have this same challenge as well, which is managing work and managing client expectations, because there's always something new coming along. You can never say each week will be the same. I think that's a challenge that has to regularly be overcome.
In terms of client expectations, then, are you talking about just deadlines or potentially what's possible in terms of tax planning or what the advice might look like? What types of things go through your mind when you think about managing a client's expectation?
I think, yeah. So I think it would be a mix of different things. For example, I think client communication is very important. So when I say client expectation, I mean a lot more about client communication, because I see that a lot of the problems in the industry is around delayed communication. And I think if I'm proactive, or if we're proactive in terms of communicating with the client, so even if it's just an update as to where we are with the work, I think that's something that it's a challenge to be honest, but that's something that I've tried to keep up with. So client expectation would be more around communication for me. In terms of, I think you mentioned tax planning. I don't really explain it from that angle, in the sense that when clients usually come to us, they are expecting us to provide the solution. So they don't really have the expectation in that sense. I probably mean more around client communication and keeping them up to date, getting things done and on a timely basis.
Yeah, it makes sense. So it's more so than, I think, what you're saying is almost keeping them up to date so they don't think, what's happening? Is this close to being finished? Are they even doing anything on this project at the moment? Do you know what I mean? I think it's just making sure that they know that something's happening and that you haven't forgot about them, and having an idea of when the work's going to be complete.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So obviously, I know I'm saying this on a public platform, so I don't want anyone to hold me to account. We try our best. And sometimes when it comes to tax advisory, the project is not just 1 week, 2 weeks. Sometimes it might be a 3-4 month project, for example. And it's easy to become preoccupied elsewhere. And that's where you have to sort of take the proactive step to re-communicate with the client, keep them in the loop, as you say.
Yeah, yeah. You mean when you've got a big project on, you might be putting a lot of time to that and you might forget about the other things that aren't happening right then. So then being proactive and still remembering about the other things that you've got on, the other clients that you're dealing with, etc.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Got it. So obviously for you then, the big pro for setting up by yourself was that freedom in terms of deciding when you do stuff and I suppose what you do, et cetera. Are there any other big pros for you personally to think of running your own firm, even if you didn't anticipate it maybe when you first started?
I think with everything, there's always the pros and the cons. So for example, sometimes people may have this conception, which is that you're running your own firm, so everything is. So an employee would have this conception, or you could say misconception, that because he or she is running their own firm, it's a lot better, just broadly speaking. But I think it's important to always make clear that there's pros and cons to everything. So So for example, as I say, when it came to challenges, so it's not easy looking at the client expectations. It's not easy having the full responsibility all coming back to you. And there's a flip side, which is, okay, yes, there's potential to earn more than being an employment. Yes, definitely, of course. But I think it's just important to make it clear that there's pros and cons for everything. So I've been in employment and I'm running my own right now. So I've seen both sides, as in all four sides. So the pros of each and the cons of each. So in terms of advantages or benefits, as I say, for me, it was more around the freedom. I think every individual that sets up on their own, they'll have their own sort of goals and why they're doing, but for me, I think the primary thing was around the freedom. And look, I've already made it clear. When I say freedom, I don't mean I'm just going to sit at home and work 1 hour a week or something like that. I think I've explained clearly, which is more around being in control of the balance and the time. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. So when you started off, actually, you weren't just doing tax week, or did you actually start off by doing tutoring? Like, what was kind of the steps from going from I'm employed to I'm there doing something by myself, all the way up to like I now provide advisory work? Do you know what I mean?
Yep. So you know what? To be honest, tutoring, how did I even get into that? Let me just think, because I got into that when I was still in employment. So it was many years ago. I was in employment, and to be honest, I'm not too sure how I actually got into it. I remember my first student very well, or my first 3-4 students. I do remember them. So for example, the first one was ACCA F6 taxation. So it wasn't CTA or ATT. It was ACCA F6 taxation. And from there, so I can't remember how I got into it or why I got into it. It went that somebody just randomly asked me. I think if I'm not mistaken, I actively went out and I thought, you know what, let me start tutoring because there's some potential there. I don't think it was the other way, whereby someone approached me and said, can you tutor me and the rest of it? But I can't remember exact. So yeah, so I did start tutoring just privately, a couple of hours a week, say 2 hours, 3 hours. And then slowly but surely the demand started to grow. And at that time, I had just finished my CTA examinations. And so I jumped from teaching tax to then teaching ATT and then teaching a mix of everything, including CTA. And I don't know, it was just one of them things where with a lot of big four students, my name just went around. So every, like, literally at one point I was tutoring in addition to my employment, I was tutoring, say, closer to exams, especially. So we have the sittings in May and November. I was tutoring like easily 20 to 30 hours per week on top of my employment.
Wow.
So, yeah. At some point. So I did used to have a lot of demand at one point. Yeah, literally, I used to just get text messages like, so-and-so has passed me your number, I work with you, do you have availability and the rest of it? And from there, things started to grow. So when I did leave employment, I did have this to fall back on. So I think, there's that other thing whereby some will be, I don't want to say scared, but I'll use the word hesitant to take the jump from employment to setting up on their own. And obviously, one of the key main reasons for that would be around financial stability and security. So for me, perhaps one can argue that I had this to fall back on, which is the tutoring side of things. So as I say, when I did leave employment, there was about 6, 7, 8 months whereby I was just tutoring and I was touring the world as well. And then I actually started to put my head down in August 2021. So yeah. But yeah, I think the tutoring, to be honest, like, I would love to get back into it. And I still get requests sometimes. So obviously not as much as before, but I do have some previous students that they've moved on to the next, for example, ATT, CTA, they're still studying and they want my support and the rest of it. And to be honest, at this moment in time, I politely declined just because I'm just a bit too tied up at the moment with the advisory. But I always think, and I tell my wife sometimes as well, that I would love to get back into the tutoring. And you know, it was really good. And it used to give me a sense of satisfaction when I teach the students and something clicks because I've explained it a certain way. That used to really make me happy. They sharing the Excel screen and doing the computations. Like, I love that sort of thing. I know people are probably thinking, this guy's a geek or a nerd or something, but I genuinely enjoy those type of things. So, and I think, yeah, it's important to enjoy what you do. If it gives you a sense of satisfaction, that's quite important as well. I think that allows for the longevity that I was speaking about at the start. And, but yeah, the tutoring, if students are listening to this, I don't want to miss the opportunity. So if students are listening, I will look to get back into it very soon. How I'll do that, I have no idea, but because there was a time at the start. So even after August 2021, I still used to do tutoring. So that used to keep me going. And then over time, I've just reduced. And for the last year, I haven't done anything. But yeah, it was a good time. It was a good moment in my life. Good period.
Yeah, I've done some tutoring as well, and I completely agree with like the satisfaction. Every time I have a tutoring session with someone, I come away just feeling like energized in a way. Like mm-hmm. I don't find any moment of tutoring someone dull and boring. I just find the whole thing interesting and I suppose fun and almost like I'm giving back in a way to help someone that's struggling with something. So I've tutored officially 3 people. There's less of a pool for me, to be fair, because I just do human capital when there's only like 60 people that sit that per sitting. So there's not as many people out there for me, unfortunately, as there is. There's just a few, but I'm same as you. I want to do more of it, I think, at the start of next year and maybe even the full of next year, because I just like doing it so much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think, you know what, to be honest, it's helped me with the advisory as well. So obviously, In tax advisory, there's the technical aspects and then there's the practice aspects as well. So in the technical aspects, it's definitely helped me because honestly speaking, the owner managed business CTA paper study manual, I know it inside out till now.
Yeah.
So I literally know it inside out along with the individual CTA paper and the inheritance tax paper. I think OMBs I'm the most strong with, but the other two papers I'm pretty fluent as well. So from the technical side, it does give me an edge as well. I can quickly find things and the rest of it. And as I say, it's really quite enjoyable tutoring students. Students are very eager to learn and they're very respectful. And sometimes I think I don't even deserve to be tutoring you, but here we are. And yeah, as I say, like, you know, I used to have a lot of demand from students from PwC. There was many from PwC, APME. Yeah, there were a few from KPMG and the other was Deloitte. So yeah, EY and Deloitte. So yeah, as I say, I think I was doing something right at the time. That's why my number went around. But yeah, it's a bit of a shame. But yeah, let's see what happens in the next year.
If you want to be able to provide amazing tax advice, impress your peers and colleagues, then I suggest you take a look at the Tax Advice Masterclass. In the masterclass, you'll get to see real examples from work I've done over the years, where I show you what's good and also what's bad about it. I also show you the hallmarks of high quality tax advice that you need to ensure are present in your advice to make sure it's high quality, and there's much more covered too. Head on over to thetaxprofessionalspodcast.com/masterclasses for details on how to enrol. The next one is February 2024, and hopefully I can see you or some of your team or colleagues in that masterclass.
Obviously you do a lot of advisory work now. Did you ever do any compliance work or do you still do any compliance work like self-assessment tax returns or corporation tax returns or do you stay away from that?
No, we do both. We do both. As in, I don't actively advertise the compliance side of things, but as part of the nature, sometimes it just means that, yes, we do compliance. So in terms of experience, I'm fully experienced and well-versed with assessment tax returns. I used to be an accountant, so when it comes to a set of accounts, I can still do that. I had a really good manager when I first got to accountancy. I think, you know what, just another point that I want to make is, I think one thing that I've noticed, some tax advisors, they don't have the accounting background. And I'm not saying that's the direct negative, but I think if you do have the accounting background, it really makes it a strong positive for yourself. So I can review a set of accounts without any issue. And I learned in my early years, I learned how to do that with my manager, and my father's an accountant as well. So a set of accounts have been around the house for many years. Yep. So in terms of the compliance side of things, yes, we still do that. So for example, yesterday I was looking at assisting a client with an IHT 100 form. So that would be classed as compliance. And yeah, in terms of the nature of the advisory work, sometimes it means that compliance has to be looked at. But as I say, our main focus is around the pure advisory. And sometimes the compliance comes in, and yes, we can deal with that as well.
So can you actually remember then, like, the first advisory project that you won, or maybe the first big advisory project that you won? And can you remember what it was?
Yep. There were a few back in August, September, October, I remember. I think one of the big ones that really sort of got me going was an inheritance tax report, an advisory report for an individual who's based in Moscow, Russia. And this individual had connections and ties to the UK, so owned properties in the UK, son and daughter were studying in the UK, and assets owned in Russia, assets owned in India, assets owned in the UK and some other jurisdictions as well. And we were engaged basically to provide an options report. So we've got this IHT liability in the UK. What can we do with it? What's your advice? We had to advise around the domicile status initially, which I scoped out. So obviously that wasn't part of the scope, but it became part of the scope when I sort of realized that, you know what, we've actually got a domicile issue here in terms of we need to understand. Because as some of the listeners will know, inheritance tax, sometimes people get confused. They think it's about residency. Residency is very important for income tax, capital gains tax, and stamp duty land tax, for example. But inheritance tax is primarily around domicile status. And yes, residency does come back into the mix in terms of you have the deemed domicile. So if you've been UK resident for a certain number of years, you become deemed domicile. But again, we come back to domicile status. So it's very difficult to provide inheritance tax advice if we don't know the domicile status. So yeah, that was one of my first clients. In terms of providing advice on what he can do with the, I think the estate in the UK was worth around 4 million, if I'm not mistaken. And then passing on to the children, how can we get the children involved? He was divorced. So how does that sort of come into the advice? He had some wider assets as well. So I think that was one of the first cases that we looked at.
So actually then, when you're picking up advisory projects, they're actually like pretty big advisory projects by the sounds of it, because that's no small feat, is it, doing a report on that after doing all the research, thinking about all the options, and I suppose thinking of the best ways for them to move forward with it.
Exactly. Yeah. So as in before, so that was my first project. My first project was a lot smaller, but that was one of my first big projects.
Yeah.
And that's why I thought I'd mention it. But yeah, you're right. Obviously, there's a lot of moving parts. There's a lot of reading that had to be done. There's a lot of investigating, a lot of communication, checking with my network and the rest of it. So yeah, it was a big project.
A lot of the time, people don't necessarily realize when they need to take tax advice. So this person, for example, it sounds like they know that because they're selling the property, there's going to be some tax implications, and they should probably take some advice. But a lot of people don't really know what the triggers are for when they should ask a question. Do you know what I mean? So, but if you have a good relationship with them and you're talking to them regularly, they might just tell you something that they're doing, and you might be like, well, that's going to trigger a tax thing if you don't think about it. And so we might be able to structure it better. Do you know what I mean? Because that happens a lot in my world of employment taxes, I think, because for some reason, people just seem to know less about it. It's probably because most in-house finance functions have people that have done either like ACA or ACCA or similar. So corporation tax, they probably know more about, but employment tax doesn't get covered much. So I think when you have those good relationships, you can almost like get information from them to help. And then you can be like, well, you could do some advice on that. And then you can pick up another project maybe on the back of it. Or even in your case, they just get in contact with you when they think they need more advice.
Exactly. And I think obviously the commercial aspect of winning work and earning fees and the rest of it is all part of it, of course. But I think another key element that should be focused on should be around the education side. So educating clients. Obviously, it takes time and the rest of it, but I think that's something that if everyone were to sort of get involved actively in educating clients, I think that's a big market in and of itself in terms of how to go about doing it. What's the best way to do it? Because as you say, most clients, even till today, so in accountancy, one of the first things that I learned was that many clients, they'll do things. I'm talking about 10 years ago. At that time, I realized that many clients, they'll do things. And then when it's the year-end meeting with the accountant, that's when they'll start telling them, oh, I did this, I did that. And it's the react, you immediately in the reactive phase, or you're in the reactive status whereby something's already happened and now we've been made aware of it. So now what should we do? And I think till today, I think it's still the case, which means really and truly that there's been no improvement around the education. Yeah, I think nowadays there are many modern accountants, as they call themselves, whereby they proactively providing management accounts on a monthly basis, for example. And I think that's how it should be. That is how it should be. And so it is a step in the right direction.
Yeah. And you know, to be fair, the reactive scenario you're talking about there, where they've like got to the end of the tax year and there's stuff to tell you, that's almost like one step better than the one that I tend to find a lot, which is where there's a HMRC inquiry and that's when they've realised they've got an issue. Yeah. In employment taxes, that happens a lot. People don't realise that literally just giving like anything to staff or taking them out for just a drink or something, it could be a taxable benefit. But in a lot of cases it is. But yeah, that tends to crop up a lot for me. It's at the point of a HMRC inquiry when they realise that they need help because they've messed something up.
Exactly. But, yeah. So that is a very dangerous step further.
It is, yeah. But the awareness piece in terms of like almost making people aware of how tax advice can help them, I think, is like key. And that's where all of us as tax professionals can probably play our part a bit. It's just letting people know in like almost the typical scenarios where tax advice can advise. Because obviously it costs money, right? But if you're planning or you're helping someone to save it, it will usually far outweigh the amount they're paying you. So literally within the last year, we had one client that one of their staff wanted to put all their wage into a pension. And so we set it up in a way through a salary sacrifice that meant that it was like exceptionally national insurance efficient. And I think it saved them about £10,000 in national insurance. And our fee only cost like £2,500. So not only have they made their employee happy by doing what they wanted, what that employee wanted, they've also profited like over £7,500 straight away as well. And I think a lot of people don't necessarily realize that when they could seek tax advice.
Sure. Sure. No, I completely agree with you. And I think when it comes to tax advisory, there's two angles. One is around where you can put something into place where you can provide the tax savings for the client and you can explain it to them that this is the potential tax savings. I think the one that's a bit more trickier when it comes to making clients understand is around tax advice, which will benefit them in the future, but not now. So for example, the IHT options report, there's no immediate tax savings. Now, that's where it's sometimes difficult to communicate with the client. And I think to be fair, and the pushback would be that I think sometimes the clients need to understand as well that the saving is for the long term, for example, and not now. I think so it has to work both ways. So I know I'm saying we should educate and the rest of it, we should. And then at the same time, sometimes you find clients for a bit, they're just not willing to understand on the rest of it. So that's where you have to have the pushback on. It's up to them now to start understanding as well.
One thing I thought about for you, because obviously like you kind of, I suppose, were involved in advice before you set up your own firm somewhat when you were on the Markel tax helplines, but like obviously giving advice on the phone as opposed to writing a big report on like inheritance tax, obviously that is completely different, right? How have you like, I suppose, been able to develop that advisory skill for you, like working by yourself for I suppose almost the majority of your tax career?
Yes. So before that, I was at a couple of boutique firms before Markel Tax. So the helpline just sort of massively increased my knowledge. But before that, I did have exposure to the advisory side as well and within Markel Tax as well. So yeah, in terms of setting up on my own, it wasn't something completely new to me. But yeah, you're right in terms of giving advice over the phone compared to sitting down, doing research, preparing tax advisory reports and the rest of it, is a completely different ballgame. I agree with that.
Yeah, yeah. The only reason I was asking, I suppose, is because a lot of people, I think, even when they work for firms, struggle to learn that skill over a period of time, and you've almost like thrown yourself in the deep end a bit more with it. Which is why I suppose I created the masterclass that I've got now to help people with tax research, with giving tax advice, because like I think a lot of people think that giving tax advice is literally just saying, is it taxable, yes or no? Do you know what I mean? Rather than taking it a step further and go, if you leave it as it is now, this is what your liability would be, but these are all the things you can do and this is how it impacts that. Do you know what I mean? That's advice to me. It's not advice when you just give them a yes or no, is it taxable? I would class that as giving tax information, but not advice.
For sure, for sure. Exactly. No, I think tax advisory is a lot more than that, of course. You have, as you say, if you're doing it from an inheritance tax perspective, if you're doing a thing, this is the calculation, this is your current tax liability. Now you have option one, do this, option two, do that. And within each, so you might have four or five options. And within each option, you have to set out the pros and cons for that particular client. So it's not about just giving them one option and just running with it for all the clients. It's about it's about providing that bespoke service. So assessing the whole situation. I think a key thing that I find sometimes accountants and advisors missed out on is understanding the long-term goals of the individual or the family. It's like I've seen instances whereby advice has been given but the long-term plans are something else. So that advice becomes nullified within 2 years, for example. So it's a waste of time and money. The advice should have been slightly different, for example. So, and I think that then comes back to the communication with the client, understanding them better, and providing that bespoke service.
Yeah, yeah, no, agreed. Would you say kind of the support you've provided has changed over time, or would you say it's very much been the same? Because it sounds like more recently, and I've seen a couple of your LinkedIn posts, they seem to be more targeted at inheritance tax. So is that something that you're doing more of now than you would have, say, a year ago?
No, I would say it's still a mix. It's still a mix of things. Inheritance tax, it's something that I look at regularly. So at least three days a week, I'll be looking at inheritance tax. But I wouldn't say we're more busier in that section than other areas. I wouldn't directly say that, but it's something I personally do, and that's why I probably talk about it a lot more as well.
Yeah, fair enough.
And again, I think maybe it comes back to that, the awareness and the education around it as well. So for example, I'm from the Asian background, and when it comes to, as in not my immediate family, my family is generally quite open at the rest of it, but I know in the Asian background and perhaps in other backgrounds as well, whereby when it comes to talking about death or money or finances between family members and the rest of it, it can get quite, what's the word? I think people are shy to talk about this sort of thing. But then they don't realize that if you do nothing, you'll be in a far worse situation as a family general. Because on each death, 40% going to the tax man, that's no good for anyone, especially if there's potential planning that can be undertaken. For example, last week I had a case whereby husband died in 2014, mother died in July 2023. And the two sons now have approached me and they're saying, oh, what can you do for us? Obviously, there is something called a deed of variation that we can probably consider. But really and truly, they should have come to us before the father's death. And if not, at least after the father's death, which was in 2014. Because now is very difficult. So I only say when it comes to IHT that individually or as a family, you should give yourself enough time. Everyone knows about the 7-year rule. That's quite easy to utilize. So you have to give yourself 7 years for that. The earlier, the better, sooner rather than later. Because the simple reason being is the earlier you approach us, the more options that we can set out for you, the more options we have in front of us on the table. As we get later and later and post steps, there are still potential planning opportunities. However, I would say you do start to restrict and limit yourself.
Yeah, yeah, you know what, I don't think you necessarily realize it, but I think you're almost getting a bit of an IHT specialism going here, maybe a niche in it.
You know what, I've been advised a couple of times you should just have a niche and you should, what's the word, go narrow and deep rather than just being on the surface. I always think about that, but I think at this moment in time, we're finding and doing what we're doing. So as I say, we work quite closely with business owners as well. So throughout the business life cycle, again, accountants are, you could say, generalists. Obviously, you get the accountants that are very specific in the industry, but accountants are generalists. So you can't expect them, as in I don't expect them and nobody should expect them to know or to have a deep knowledge around tax advisory. Because tax is a specialism in and of itself. So there may be some things, for example, there may be a lot of cash that's built up in the trading company, for example, or there may be a residential property stack in the trading company, because we all know as business owners, things move very quick. So not everybody has time to always be looking at each and every aspect. So sometimes cash builds up, the business owner decides to buy a property, that property stack in the trade. So now if I was to look at that, I would immediately say, look, there's a tax risk there. There's a commercial risk as well, which is that property or that large amount of cash is under potential scrutiny or can be caught by litigation if anything were to go wrong within the trade. So this is the proactive side, which is it's important for everyone to work together. It's not about me versus you. It's more around everyone working together and achieving goals and highlighting tax risks, as I just explained, or proactively talking about tax planning opportunities, or we might just be a discussion whereby, as you earlier mentioned, where you just have a general chat and the client starts talking to you about certain employees that they want to incentivize, for example. So then that's when light bulbs, you start thinking about shares, schemes, growth shares, and the rest of it. And obviously in your line of work, employment taxes, you might just have a chat with the client. The client may have, I don't know, purchased a new car or whatever it is, and they have no idea that this is going to give rise to certain tax charges, for example, looking at benefits in kind. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, although to be fair, our stuff is more so, I think people realise, for example, that getting a car is a benefit. Like, I don't think people are naive enough to not think that. But I think what they don't realise, for example, is like if they get a diesel car that's giving out loads of CO2 emissions, and they could get maybe a petrol hybrid or an electric car, that the amount of tax and national insurance difference is substantial. And so they don't even consider it. They end up, so I've seen cases, for example, where there's like a bus, a minibus that's left on the director's, the owner and director's on their driveway, and they've got access to the keys. They're insured for the minivan. They don't, the minibus, they don't use it, but it's there and it's like 20 years old. It's diesel. So it's definitely like 37%. CO2 emissions straight away. So, and it's a minibus, which would be expensive. So you're probably looking at like a 25K taxable benefit every year for the director. Like, it's just little things like that people don't realize. But I think the point you said anyway about like accountants and working together with accountants to spot things, like I even think it's the same thing with being tax advisors, because particularly in my area, I think a lot of people underestimate employment tax and think it's easy and straightforward. But if honestly, the amount of things that get missed because people take that mindset and don't get us involved in like the conversations is massive.
No, for sure. And to be honest, employment tax is one area that we rarely get involved in. So I think it's important to understand your strengths. So if something comes up that as a firm we can't really deal with, I'll be very clear with the client that this is not something I look at. And employment tax, to be honest, is one of them, because I know. As in, obviously, benefits in kind and the rest of it probably can get bad. But when it comes to national insurance, I found that to be a minefield as well, to be honest.
It is.
I was like, over the last couple of years, I've seriously realized a few things, which is tax is a minefield. National insurance can get really tricky, especially when you start looking at overseas employees overseas employees and things like that. Yeah, it does get quite tricky, and it's not for me to comment further on. But yeah, there are certain areas where we don't get involved in, and I would say employment tax is probably one of them. I know it can get quite tricky.
Yeah, maybe you need to speak to me then no more.
definitely, for sure. I think, to be honest, I don't even advertise those services anyway. So it's hardly getting that sort of inquiry. I did get one, a friend of mine, I think he used to be at school with me. But he reached out, it was last year, and he's become the financial controller of a very, very large organization. I can't remember which industry it is, but he started us. He wanted us to look after this overseas employees or something like that. I just cannot do this because this is not possible. I think it's important to know where your strengths lie, basically.
Yeah, no, agreed. So just two things then to finish us off, Omar. So just in summary then, like, what is it that Azure Tax do and can help with, and where can the audience learn more about you and get in touch if they want to?
Okay. In terms of what we do, as broadly mentioned at the start, we look after individuals, high net worths, business owners. We also assist accountancy firms and other professional services firms in assisting their clients with their tax matters. And that can be a range of areas such as IHT planning, trusts, overseas trusts, residency domicile issues, group restructurings, property tax matters, and the rest of it. Tax inquiries and investigations as well. That's more of a new offering that we've sort of brought out over the last 6 months. I think anywhere where there is a tax matter that needs to be looked at, which is out of scope of a law firm, for example, of a team of lawyers or a team of accountants, if there's any specific areas of tax matters that needs to be looked at for their clients, then I think it's important that we work together. So in terms of where to reach out, LinkedIn, I'm quite active on LinkedIn. There's my email address, omar@aswatax.co.uk. I'm sure in this day and age of technology, it's not too hard to find. So yeah, I'll just leave it at that.
I found it interesting to hear that Omar's motivations were freedom rather than money when he started his own business. He mentioned about long-term sustainability, and I can see how chasing the money could negatively impact that, whereas having a different focus like Omar with freedom could help. Omar's contact details, LinkedIn, and all of the links mentioned throughout this episode are included in the show notes at thetaxprofessionalspodcast.com/TTPP92. The show notes do also include a link to the Tax Advice Masterclass. If you enjoyed this episode, then to make sure you don't miss out on any future episodes of the podcast, you can head on over to thetaxprofessionalspodcast.com/subscribe to sign up for email notifications. Episodes are released bi-weekly and on Mondays. But that's it for this episode. I hope you enjoyed the episode and have taken away some useful points to help you to progress, develop, and improve your career. Until next time.